and welcome to the 24th episode of the Radix Copycast. I'm Emily King, Radix's marketing executive. Today I am joined by Fiona Campbell-Howes, Radix's managing director.
Hello.
In this episode, we're going to be looking at some of my key takeaways from this year's Technology for Marketing and Advertising conference. And we've also got an exclusive interview with Doug Kessler, creative director and co-founder of Velocity, in which I talked to him about the potential impact intelligent content could have on copywriting.
So Emily, the TFM&A conference, which you went to the other week, ought to be really a showcase for kind of emerging technologies or the kind of latest technologies in marketing and advertising, although we tend to get involved just on the marketing side. So were there any kind of fancy new technologies or trends that were noticeable at the event?
Well, there was definitely, I couldn't because the queues were too much, there was definitely some interesting augmented reality booths going on.
Oh, really?
With some HTC tech. And that was mostly upstairs. That was looking a bit interesting. But everyone seemed to mostly be trying to persuade everyone about marketing automation and trying to get data about, you know, prospects and leads and that, so they could get into their funnel. There was a sort of categorization system that they had there. And if you wanted to find particular vendors and you wanted to find them by category, marketing automation wasn't a category.
Oh, interesting.
They sort of split it up. Yeah. And so they decided to class sort of CRM and software as a service together.
Right.
And so you had companies like Marketo and Oracle Marketing Cloud, as well as people like small providers like Zoho, kind of like in like the same category, but in different places at the conference.
And I think you mentioned also that Silverpop were there, but they were classed as a kind of email marketing technology, is that correct?
Yeah, they were sort of, that was kind of like what they were pushing. And then, but then it was kind of like this weird sort of crossover between sort of email marketing and the fact that obviously they were automation programs that led through email.
And I think that's quite interesting because certainly in my mind, you know, vendors like Marketo and Silverpop are both in the marketing automation category. So it's quite interesting that at the event, they might have classed Marketo along with CRM and Silverpop along with email and not really recognised that there is the marketing automation category. So I don't know, is marketing automation falling out of favour, do you think? Is it kind of losing its cachet as a term?
Well, no, because the two key... Because I went to both Karen Flanagan's keynote, which is HubSpot, and I went to Doug's keynote, and both of them mentioned marketing automation as a term. Nobody broke it down. To me, marketing automation is like the general takeaway term, and then you have subsets of that, of processes that you can automate. It just seemed kind of weird that on the show floor it wasn't as visible as a term.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Given what we talked about in our podcast last time, I was wondering if you'd seen any kind of fancy intelligent content technologies showcased at the conference?
None that I could actually see, no, nothing.
Right.
Nothing that I could see. Whether or not anyone's thinking about using their platforms to enable that kind of thing was not at all obvious from looking around.
Yeah, interesting, because that's what you talked to Doug Kessler about at the event, and I think we're going to go over and listen to that interview now.
Okay, so I managed to catch up with Doug in a corner of Pizza Express just beside the conference.
Nice.
To ask him some questions about intelligent content. And here is that interview. Intelligent content is being touted as the next big thing in content marketing. In your view, what's the difference between intelligent content and traditional content, Doug?
Okay, well, I'm still learning about intelligent content too, so it was new to me not very long ago, where Joe Polizzi in Content Marketing Institute wrote about it, and they bought an event called Intelligent Content, and when those guys get excited about something, I think it's worth a look. So for me, I've seen their definition. I think the Anne Rockley definition is structurally rich and semantically categorized content, which makes it automatically discoverable, reusable, reconfigurable, and adaptable. That seems to be the characteristics of intelligent content. So it sounds to me like content objects that can be hot swapped into new media, new channels, new pieces of content. That would be my definition of it.
Speaking as a copywriter, what kind of challenges do you think intelligent content will present for people writing it?
I think intelligent content really will be a challenge for writers because we're used to, certainly I'm used to, linear writing and linear stories where you take someone on a journey, however short or long, and you hold them by the hand and you walk them through your story. you know, and it's almost like a three-act structure, you know. And what I'm understanding of intelligent content is that it will break up the three-act structure, and you'll be peddling one scene at a time, for instance. These things will be swapped into new content by other people or even automatically for new channels. So if I were writing knowing that that was going to happen to my content, I would write very differently. I think it would probably be a lot more soundbitey and a lot less dependent on this three-act structure or narrative arc. And that scares me because that's what I feel like I'm good at, and I think it's what people like. It's what, you know, content that people want to read has some narrative arc to it. So I do think I'm a little bit skeptical about intelligent content, but I know that I'd have to write differently if I were writing for that kind of context.
For me, it makes me feel like I need to do a list of 5 non-linear video games that writers need to play in order to understand snippets of content.
Yeah.
Top of that would be Skyrim,
okay.
But you know that you wouldn't want to get too far down the rabbit hole with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Which new skills do you think copywriters will need to learn to thrive in intelligent content as it sort of develops?
Yeah, I think the new skills for writers will be about modularity, and I suppose writers will also be not just originating content objects and modules that get swapped around by other people, but they'll also be doing the swapping and recombining. So I suppose writers will probably have to get good at things like tagging and structuring really well, and you know, and recognizing where all these chunks of content are going to end up. And that feels like quite a learning curve to me. I don't think that's a natural skill for writers.
Do you think the software tools that writers use today are sufficient as content formats develop? Have you found any new writing apps that are more suited to the types of content we write for today?
As far as content writing apps, I'm kind of stuck back in Word. I still use Word. I know how it works. I probably use 5% of its functionality. I have tried some of these stripped-down writing tools where they get rid of all distractions and it's text only, and I guess I'm a creature of habit. I stick to what I know. I certainly use Evernote as a writing tool, and I could imagine in an intelligent content context and universe, things like Evernote where you can capture snippets and chapters and reassemble yourself will be increasingly useful. But for me, I'm kind of old-fashioned that way.
I think there's also perhaps an issue of with apps making sure that anyone who's reviewing it along the chain from outside the agency to clients are actually able to access it. Is that also an issue collaboration?
Actually, I think that is a good point. I probably should have brought it up in that answer, which is, you know, collaborative tools certainly will make the new kind of content marketing already, even before intelligent content, tools that will let people come in and collaborate on the work, like Google Docs, Google Apps for Work, are obviously really useful and on the rise. Or there's the workflow apps like Kapost and things like that that do, you know, all of the workflow and backend that let editors and writers collaborate around topics and issues and pieces. Those certainly will get more and more and more important. I'm also a little bit old school about wanting to control the work, and sometimes I think version control can be lost, and you find something's gone live when 9 people have weighed in with their changes and you didn't know about it. That scares me, but again, this is an old dog talking about new tricks.
Okay, for my last question, I'd like to ask you, how long do you think it will take for intelligent content to become the norm for marketing organizations?
I don't think intelligent content will become the norm at all. I think it will remain a niche until the day that our robot overlords win in marketing and replace humans, which I just did a post about this, which was half in jest. A marketer automation, you know, welcome to your robot overlords or something like that. And I was kidding when I started it a little bit, looking at the people at checkout counters and stores who are being replaced by the self-scanners and saying, wow, marketers are going this way, they're going to replace us. And I was half joking. I do mean it, but the more I read about it to write that post, the scarier it got. And I realized a lot of our jobs are going to be replaced. And so I could then imagine in that world that 90% of content is this kind of content. But it's hard for me to picture what a world that would be, and I'm hoping it's far enough after my death that I don't have to find out.
Thank you very much, Doug.
Sure.
For the interview.
Sure, appreciate it.
Yeah, so there's some great points there from Doug, and it's really interesting to hear that he doesn't think that intelligent content is the future of content marketing, because I've kind of been thinking the other way, but it's great to hear an opposite perspective. But Emily, apart from that, did you have any other kind of interesting takeaways from the conference?
Well, I decided, because I wrote a post about this, and we'll link to that in the show notes, but I decided there were six lessons that I could take away from the conference this year. And in a way, none of them should be surprising. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be ones that you should, well, certainly, I say you, I mean, sort of certainly B2B marketers shouldn't be surprised by. They should be lessons that they're already thinking about, but actually, perhaps in our experience, people tend to forget. So, I mean, we talked about marketing automation before the interview, but one of the things that Kieran Flanagan made apparent in his keynote, even though he works for HubSpot, he knows that marketing automation is not a magic wand. It's not going to solve all your woes, even if you have got the budget to buy into a platform, because you still need to have content that is appropriate for the potential customers and existing customers you are putting into that platform.
And I think that is a really important point. And also, I think as more people are using marketing automation and having to develop content for it, the bar is being set higher and higher for the quality of the content that you create. And we've talked about this a lot. So it's definitely not a silver bullet in itself, and it's probably getting less and less so unless you pay real close attention to the quality of the content.
Yeah. Another lesson was that, and this was from, because Doug did sort of redid his mastering tone of voice keynote, and there were 10 points in that, and yeah, that was a lot to take on board, but perhaps one of the important nuances that came out of it was that he said that people needed to stop being so obsessed with the explicit.
Yeah, and what did that actually mean?
It means that it's how you tell a story. If you're, obviously, storytelling has become a big thing in content marketing the past year or so. And it's realizing that, yeah, just because you've put together this great story, it's understanding that how you tell that story is just as important as its content. So you need to get the tone right and just kind of obviously manufacture it in a way that people will engage with.
Yeah. So I think, if we're talking about what's explicit versus what's implicit, maybe. So, explicit is when you just tell everything, and implicit maybe when you show with the tone that you're using. You more imply what you're talking about rather than actually make explicit what you're talking about. Yeah, interesting.
I mean, this links into marketing automation, but email marketing isn't going away. I mean, this has been certainly apparent for anyone who's been looking at what's been happening with social networks over the past year or so, and things that have been happening with obviously Facebook particularly, or even just Google Plus as a platform now being sort of chopped up into parts, that you can't rely on social, and that it's, unlike email, it does still seem a far more transient thing. One platform might be doing really well 1 year, but then a couple of years down the line, it might not be doing so great. Yeah. But if you've managed to get consent, obviously, from people to have their email address and then put them into your sort of marketing system, then at least you can have a reasonable amount of content, contact with them that is obviously agreed upon. And you can obviously, you're more likely to get your message to them. I mean, if you think about the way that Facebook and Twitter works, Facebook depends on when you post and whether or not enough people engage with it as to whether or not it'll have any real organic reach. Otherwise you've got to pay for reach. And on Twitter, well, obviously it's a constant stream of posts.
Yes.
So you might post something at 10 in the morning, but somebody logs onto Twitter at lunchtime could very well not see that post.
Yeah, exactly. If you've got 5,000 followers, how many of those are actually going to see any tweet that you do?
So email marketing isn't going away. And then visual content is the next lesson, in that it can still have a huge impact, especially when it's useful. I mean, not a meaningless infographic that just bungs some stats together, but something that has interesting information that you can do useful things with. So I was really impressed with Marketo. They had put up a great big board to the side of their space in the exhibition centre. I mean, it was pretty big, sort of about 2 metres tall or more, and pretty wide. And they had someone scribing all over it key points that were happening or being talked about at various keynotes and sort of lessons that were being run in workshops. And it was just nice to sort of see it. I mean, I was only at the conference for one day, but it was nice to see it even in that first day just fill up with little drawings and sort of nuggets of information from the conference. And there was an amazing amount of people just kind of stopping and looking at this and giving it a good look. So they were clearly looking at the information that's being put there. And I would say, other than perhaps some of the more bizarre exhibits like the augmented reality, it was a simple piece that was getting a lot of interest.
Yeah, and I think you said lots of people were taking photos of it as well, and those would have been going up on social media. So that's nice, a really smart move, I think, by Marketo to do that. Yeah, really nice sort of fresh and unique content,
This was, this is an interesting point. I don't think people were thinking about it too much. But, I mean, as copywriters, we obviously try to make sure that the content that we produce for clients is accessible to the intended audience. And then, obviously, if you're going to extrapolate that out to sort of larger sort of marketing needs, like all your content should really be accessible in some way or other. And it's not just like the tone of voice you use or the language you use or what, you know, how little or how much jargon you use. That also perhaps means that making sure that your website will work with, say, adaptive measures that people with bad sight can obviously look at it, or people who've got colour blindness don't obviously look at it and get a headache. But it also means that really, if you're going to take your content offline and bring yourself out into the real world and go to a conference like TFMA, you need to think about perhaps whether or not your stand's accessible. And this was a big thing I noticed. I'm not somebody who goes around in a wheelchair, but I do have severe back problems at times. And it was noticeable to me how few exhibitors had accessible stands. Their content online, and you know, I'd seen many of them online before, it was great and really easy to read and nice to look at and that. But when you sort of came to this moment of meeting them in reality, not as great.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting point. I think you did see a number of wheelchair users at the event.
And I was like, I was sort of looking at them, looking at their badges, because everyone had a badge, said what they were in their respective companies. There was a lot of people with budget power there who wouldn't be able to access stands by from exhibitors and actually look at their displays, look at the demos that they had there, because they hadn't thought, or maybe we should put this iPad at you know, at wheelchair sort of height. And it's a simple touch.
And I wonder how many people actually do think about accessibility in their stand design. It'd be interesting to know how many companies are building that in.
I think that obviously just the main takeaway and a lesson that anyone should be thinking if they're obviously sort of subscribing to content marketing as a concept for their marketing strategy is that marketing should offer value to customers. This goes back to sort of like what Kieran Flanagan was saying during his fireside chat, and that when sort of HubSpot were thinking about creating content, they wanted to not be shouting basically at existing and prospective customers. They wanted to be giving them useful, valuable information that they could take away and do something with.
And I think this is something that does quite often get lost when people are thinking, oh my God, I've got to create all of this content. And what stories have we got to tell? And, you know, what products do we have? And, you know, what do we want to tell the world? There's not a lot sometimes of thinking about, okay, but what does the prospect actually need to hear from us? You know, what's going to be useful to them? What's going to be helpful to them in their jobs? And I think that's definitely what any content marketer should be thinking about, is how is the prospect or customer going to find this useful?
And one that I didn't write about, one key takeaway. If you dress a man up in a spaceman suit and have him walk around the conference, people will follow you. I can't remember the name of the particular firm, but they, their name, if I remember correctly, certainly had a sort of like a space travel kind of sound to it. And yeah, they had a gentleman, I don't know how hot he was, in sort of like a fake sort of NASA astronaut, big sort of like white suit with a helmet, walking around, taking photos with people and stuff, and people were certainly following him about. So yeah, if anything else, you know, just dress someone up in an astronaut suit, send them out. They'll get attention.
There you go. That's the key takeaway. That's our advice for B2B marketers. Dress somebody up in a spaceman suit.
Yeah. Well, that's all we've got time for this episode of the Radix Copycast. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for the latest copywriting tips and insights.